Let's take a journey back to 2003. Canadian teen sensation Avril Lavigne was topping the charts and turning the music industry upside down. But what if I told you that the Avril Lavigne we know and love might not be the same Avril? What? Did Avril die? Was she replaced by a doppelganger? I'm Joanne McNally, and I'm doing a deep dive into a notorious internet conspiracy. Who replaced Avril Lavigne? Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm Tom Power. Welcome to Q. So you might have read this book in high school, I guess if you were going to Canadian or American high schools. Maybe it's a book you were assigned to read. Maybe it's a book you didn't read when you were assigned to read and you tried to go make a book report based on the title and it didn't work out because the book is called To Kill a Mockingbird. The book is from 1960. It's by Harper Lee. It tells a lot of stories, but the main one is the story of a lawyer named Atticus Finch, who is defending Tom Robinson, a black man who is accused of rape, against a young white woman in a small Alabama town. The events are narrated through the eyes of Atticus's six-year-old daughter, Scout. The book became this sensation. It's seen as one of the great American novels. It won the Pulitzer Prize. In 2006, the Association of British Librarians called it the book every adult should read before they die. And that makes sense because it's about so much. Very adult things like class and race and crime and compassion and love and innocence. Anyway, then the movie comes out in 1962, wins three Academy Awards. People still talk about Gregory Peck's performance as Atticus as like iconic and truly unforgettable. And now Richard Thomas, who you might know as John Boy in the 70s TV show The Waltons, is playing Atticus Finch in a new stage adaptation of To Kill a Mockingbird.
When I was a boy, my father gave me one of those air rifles, an air rifle. He said I could shoot all the Blue Jays I want, probably knowing I'd never be able to hit one, but to always remember that it was a sin to kill a mockingbird. I asked him why, and he said it was because they were innocent. And I became a lawyer.
That is a clip of Richard Thomas as Atticus Finch in Aaron Sorkin's stage version of To Kill a Mockingbird, a play that earned huge acclaim on Broadway. Now it's being toured all across North America. It did a run in Toronto back in December, but the play is returning to Canada next month, so there's still some tickets available for those May Toronto shows. Anyway, I remember back then I got to talk to Richard Thomas about playing Atticus, and I really loved it. He's funny, he's thoughtful, he's not precious at all about being this 70s child star. So we thought that given the show is coming back to Canada, you should hear this if you missed it. Here's my conversation with Richard Thomas.
It's a beautifully written part. It's a big part, you know. Aaron has really done an amazing thing. He decided that in the novel and in the movie, Atticus is a kind of idealized figure who is one position removed from the center of the story. Because it's really Scout is the protagonist of that, of the novel and the film. And Aaron decided that in the play, he wanted to move Atticus to the protagonist chair and give him the sort of protagonist journey. So he's done a wonderful job of, number one, taking him off the pedestal, which is a very good thing to do, and giving us an Atticus who is very teachable and who has a lot to learn and who has a wonderful sense of humor and who is perhaps less idealized and more accessible just as a character. You know, Atticus is one of these characters a little bit like I would say, well, Harold Bloom would talk about Falstaff in this way, that he's a character who has a kind of vitality that steps off the page and he feels like an actual person outside of the medium in which he's presented. There are people who talk about Atticus as if he was a real person. I speak frequently after the show with lawyers and even judges who talk about Atticus Finch as if he had been a mentor to them when they were young. He does have a presence that comes off the page as if he were a historical character rather than a fictional creation. And that's wonderful and very, very exciting. But the idealization of Atticus, it gets in the way of the kind of flesh and blood character that makes for good drama on the stage, in my opinion.
Yeah, if I understand you correctly, a perfect, unflawed character would actually be a very boring character to play on stage.
Well, someone that you couldn't really relate to at the level of what he's going through. You know, what Aaron's text does is it interrogates all of Atticus's unassailable virtues, you know, and his feeling about community and his feeling about human nature and his feeling about justice and the institutions of justice and whether their flawed nature, all of these things. It's a big awakening, and he experiences, and I think perhaps even a more profound way in the play, the experience of Black trauma, which, because it's a story about a white family experiencing Black trauma in a new kind of way. It's also a wonderfully funny and endearing story about childhood and the memory of childhood. And sometimes that aspect of the story gets overshadowed. Tom Robinson's trial takes up, I don't know what, two chapters of the book, but it bears a particular weight now in our time and place. And it is our story as Americans. It's always going to be a story we need to tell because it continues to be our story. You know, Aaron said, you know, there's pushback against this material on the left from people who don't want a white savior narrative, which this isn't. And there's pushback from the right or people who don't like it because it makes Jim Crow look bad, you know? So it is our story for better and worse. And we have to keep telling it.
Am I right that the actor who played Miss Henry DeBose in the show that I saw, the touring show that I saw, is the actor that played Scout in the film in 62? Mary Badham?
Mary Badham played Scout in the movie.
Miss Scout, you think you could tell us what happened?
I don't know. All of a sudden, somebody grabbed me, knocked me down on the ground. Then I saw someone carrying Jim.
Well, who was it?
Well, there he is, Mr. Tate. He can tell you his name.
That's wild, Richard. I didn't know. That's crazy.
I know. She's our cherry on top. She's our guardian angel. It's wonderful. And she's a wonderful woman and has devoted her life to social justice and talking about the story. And she happily joined our company and is still with us.
Did she tell you anything about the filming back then? Did you ask her any questions about Peck or anything?
Oh, sure. I didn't really. Well, I knew Greg Peck. So we would talk about it, you know, to some degree. You know, she's very ready and willing to share. And I mean, I didn't really have questions for her, but she would share things. It was wonderful.
I've never heard anyone call him Greg Peck before.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I loved it. Are you kidding me? That was very cool for me.
He was a really, really terrific guy. He was a real gentleman in a sort of an old Hollywood sense. He was a beautiful person with a great sense of humor. Very, very special man. And I didn't know him intimately, but he used to run the public reading series at the LA Public Library, which I did for him on occasion, and it was great to get to know him.
I am confident that you gentlemen will review the evidence that you have heard and restore this man to his family. In the name of God, do your duty.
You said your actor's equity card is how old?
65 years old. I have a senior actor's equity card this year.
So you started as a child actor, right?
I made my debut on Broadway in 1958 in a play called, in the same play in which James Earl Jones made his Broadway debut. A play called Sunrise at Campobello about Franklin Roosevelt.
What got you into acting? Like what excited you about acting that young?
Well, my parents were ballet dancers. I was raised really backstage in the world of the ballet. They danced with many companies, including Balanchine's when I was little. And so the theater was my world. And they were after they left that company, my dad was dancing and doing some summer stock in upstate New York, and they needed a kid for something, and they asked me, and I did it, and I loved it. And then I went back to New York, and they were casting for this play, and my first grade teacher happened to be a children's agent, so she said, "You want to come and audition for this?" And I did, and I got the part, and that was the beginning of it. It was also the period of live television too, so I spent all that time doing theater and doing live TV, which was a great learning experience.
What did you do? What live TV did you do?
Oh God, Hallmark Hall of Fame. I did about four of those, and you know, DuPont Show of the Month, Armstrong Circle Theater. Great, just you know, I did three different soap operas. Just this was a great training ground for a young actor.
Did you bring us anything? Cookies?
You know what your father would say if I brought cookies home with me?
Yes, but did you?
I might have a little bag of macaroons under my magic cloak. Shall I look?
Yes, yes!
You didn't dance, though? You didn't?
By the time I was old enough to start studying dance, I was already, you know, having my career as an actor. And I can't be quiet, so I needed a profession where I could speak.
This is Richard Thomas, urging you to watch our new series, The Waltons, here on CBS. It's more than television's only new dramatic series this season. It's a wonderfully different kind of show. You'll enjoy warm and dramatic and emotion-packed stories about me and my family, all 11 of us, as well as our friends and neighbors. So be sure to watch The Waltons here on Television 9.
So, I mean, what's your relationship like with the Waltons now?
Oh, we're like a big family. We're in touch all the time.
I mean, with the show itself, close. with the
I love it. Yeah, I love it. There's not a performance goes by at night when somebody doesn't yell my John Boy at the curtain call, which makes me very happy. You know, it was a fabulous show. It was beautifully written and beautifully acted and completely different from anything else on the air at the time. And John Boy was a radical departure from the usual long form television hero. He was a writer and an emotional feeling person. And I mean, there wasn't any other character written like that to carry a television series at the time. And it was so beautifully done, and I'm so proud of it. So I'm very happy with that association.
I mean, maybe I'm missing a little bit of history here. Up until that point, your average TV protagonist of that age would have been more of a macho, more of a fighter, and John Boy was allowed to be a little bit more sensitive. Is that what you mean?
Well, there weren't many that age, first of all. I mean, I don't know that there were other adolescent characters, you know, at the center of a long form series. But yes, the fact that, I mean, it was all, you know, like, you know, the detective or the doctor or the lawyer and it was more masculine template for the time that people saw. And John Boy introduced a different feeling tone. You know, he was a writer, and he was a young artist who was sort of comfortable in his community, but wanted to move out and have a different kind of life. And so this idea of a male central character, not driven by action and necessarily accomplishment, was very different.
Look, Gina, we may be a bunch of dirt poor hicks, but we got something a lot of other people miss. My mother and father happen to really love each other, and they happen to love their children. I've done an awful lot of thinking about what makes this family work, and I think it's because there's love enough to go around and some to spare. I guess maybe we just care about life, whether it's a wounded raccoon or a runaway boy.
I'm Tom Power. You're listening to Q. More of my conversation with Richard Thomas coming up.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
I'm I'm Tom Power. You're listening to Q. You're in the middle of my conversation with the actor Richard Thomas, who is performing in Toronto very soon as Atticus Finch in Aaron Sorkin's stage adaptation of To Kill a Mockingbird. Richard, as you've been hearing about, became famous on the TV show The Waltons. Now, if you're a TikTok user, so you don't remember The Waltons, it was a family drama set in rural Virginia in the 30s and 40s. It was kind of a wholesome show. It was originally meant to be a Christmas special, but ended up becoming massively popular, running for 9 seasons and huge ratings back in the 1970s. I was interested, as someone who wasn't around then, to get Richard's thoughts on why The Waltons, this Depression-era historical drama, became such a big hit. Here's what he had to say.
Well, there wasn't anything else like it on the air. And in the 70s, you know, with Watergate, with Vietnam, with the end, with the, what was going on in the 70s, it was in, we were really a very conflicted country in a lot of ways. And there was so much division along family lines and everything. And the Waltons was very different. It provided a sort of a safe family space that was very different in kind and tone. And it was a unifying kind of show that brought people together from many very various different backgrounds to watch it. It was also a show that the whole family could watch in one place. It was a show that honored old people as well as young people. It was a show that wasn't about fancy, rich, enviable lives, but people who were struggling to make ends meet in the Depression. It was when it went off the air, I would have people come up to me and say, you know, there's no show about people like us anymore. Everybody's special and wonderful and fantastic. And we don't see a show about a family just struggling to make it work. So it did offer a lot that was very, very different at the time. And it was quite revolutionary. There were a lot of family shows that came along right after that, but it was the first one to do that. And wholesomeness wasn't the point of The Waltons. The point of The Waltons was what it takes to be a family and mutual support and connection. It was obviously set in the 30s, so it had that sort of a vibe to it. But it wasn't. Nobody went on the air to say we have to make a wholesome show. That wasn't the point.
You know where I think that perception came from, and I'm sure you're aware of this. I think it was in the early mid 90s, The Simpsons was. Do you remember this? The Simpsons was kind of blowing up, but it seems so tame in comparison right now, but. Bart was talking back to Homer a lot, and that was something that kind of happened on TV. It was Bush, right? Said something like, "We need American families need to be more like the Waltons and less like the Simpsons." Remember that?
We are going to keep on trying to strengthen the American family to make American families a lot more like the Waltons and a lot less like the Simpsons.
Yeah, I think it was Bush Senior. I think it was during a Republican National Convention or something like that. But our youngest sibling, Cammie Cotler, who played Elizabeth, reminded us all at the time that the Waltons were New Deal Democrats.
And do you remember the Simpsons had that line back? They said they did a joke. They were like, we're just like the Waltons. We're praying for an end of the Depression, too.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of that. I mean, there were great Doonesbury cartoons about the Waltons. Carol Burnett did a fantastic lampoon. Mad Magazine did a great Waltons lampoon. It was just wonderful to be used and abused in that way.
I was watching Saturday Night Live over the weekend, and Tina Fey was on, and she was inducting Emma Stone into the Five Timers Club. And she says, hey, Emma, you know, she was introducing herself. And she said, I had a TV show called 30 Rock that got 6 million viewers. And that wasn't considered a hit back then.
Exactly.
That was in the 2000s. I can't imagine what it was like to have. I mean, there must have been. How many people were watching the world? Millions and millions of people?
Millions and millions of people around the world, too, not just in the States. You know, we would have like. On average, a 26 share every week, and a 26 share is huge. It's you're talking about 25% of the population of the country watching that show.
So what does that do
but
to
the
you?
Other thing that
oh,
was,
go ahead, go ahead.
What do you mean?
Well, what I mean is that's a level of notoriety to have that many people. I mean, that can't be easy.
Oh, it was easy. It was fun. It was great.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Yes, of course. It was fantastic. You know, I mean, I was in the infinite wisdom of a 21-year-old, which I was when I started the show. You know, what could be better than that? You know, I mean, fortunately, it didn't lead me to a dark place in my life, you know, because I had been working as an actor my whole life. And it was really at some level, just the next job. It was the next job in an extraordinary way. But it was the next job. And so I was treating it like that. And I loved all the fame, and I loved all that. It gave me great leverage. It is still present in the consciousness of the public. But I was happy to be able to take it in stride as well as you can. And I mean, as an obnoxious, you're 20 something, you know, I mean, obviously you're going to become impossible when you become successful like that. But fortunately I was able to kind of keep the ship on an even keel for the most part.
Is it hard to get work after that? That's that people don't want a John Boy type.
Well, there's two things that happen. There are people who don't want a John Boy type, and there are people who want a John Boy type, and you don't really are not interested in either one of those. I was just lucky. I always worked. You know, I turned down jobs that were too much like that. I looked for jobs that were different. I had the theater. You know, I had the theater, and the theater is much less bound by those typecasting restraints. But there's people out there who will always think of me as John Boy, and it's fine with me.
I want to come back to that in a second. But did you say people yell out "Goodnight, John Boy" to you at this show?
All the time.
It doesn't bother you?
No, they don't do it during in the middle of a scene. They do it at the curtain call at the end. But yeah, it's great. What greater blessing can an actor have than to have a job that, number one, is a rocket to a continued career, and also to have a character that is so vivid in people's minds that they think he's real and they think that's who you are. That's, I mean, we want, when we get on stage and give a performance or get in front of the camera, for people to believe in this character and to have this character have some real life for them. And that's exactly what happens when you have a success like that. It's a great, great thing for an actor to have. Then you have to decide what you're going to do from there. And, you know, I mean, if there's nothing perfect about it, I mean, I've had disappointments and we all have. It's a long road, but I've been really fortunate. And, you know, I'm able to do this. I'm 72 years old and I'm playing Atticus Finch. What have I got to complain about?
let me end on the play you're in right now. So To Kill a Mockingbird was a book and a movie. And as I mentioned in the introduction, it was seen as quite groundbreaking in how it held up a mirror, not just to the racial prejudices in the United States, but also to the hypocrisy within the U.S. And mind you, that was back in the 1960s. It's been a good few decades since then. How do you think it still does that through this work?
I think people are astonished at how up to date the issue is in the issues, social justice issues, are in the play. The failure of institutions, because as many steps forward as have been taken, it continues to hold the mirror up to the American nature for better and worse. The idea of a black man running away and being shot in the back is something that horrifyingly we are all too familiar with still. And in many ways, we are still litigating what happened in 1865. And it has found its way in the most insidious fashion into our daily lives. And now in the most overt possible way. We're seeing this profound grain of our American stain in our daily lives. And that doesn't mean we should be cynical, or it doesn't mean we should. It's all about aspiring. It's about, you know, what are our aspirations and how far short do we fall of them? And, you know, so, you know, yes, it's wonderful. You have to have Atticus Finch. You have to have people who, against all odds, try to do the right thing, whether they succeed or fail. And we should admire them, and we should be grateful for them, you know, no matter what the color of their skin, you know, we because this is a fight we have to continue to fight.
Well, I can't begin to tell you how much I enjoyed talking to you about the work today. And thanks for making the time.
Thank you. Me too.
Yeah.
What great questions. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much. I can't wait to get back to Toronto. I absolutely love being in Canada, and I've made a lot of pictures there, and I've, this will be the fifth time I think I've been back in the theater in Toronto, so I'm very, very excited about it.
Get out of here, John Boy. That was Richard Thomas, the award-winning stage and screen actor, plays Atticus Finch in the touring production of To Kill a Mockingbird, adapted for the stage by Aaron Sorkin, the dude who wrote The West Wing and A Few Good Men and The Newsroom. The play is heading back to Canada next month. It'll be in Toronto from May 28th to June 2nd. There are still some tickets available for those performances, but they are selling fast. The other conversation we have up today is with Q guest host Talia Schlanger, her conversation with Justin Peck, the choreographer behind the new, as I said on the show, the Millennials Are Taking Over Broadway, the new production of Sufjan Stevens' album Illinois, or production based on Sufjan Stevens' album Illinois on Broadway. Go check that out. We'll see you soon. Later on.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.